Austerity is one thing in this world, but when that austerity is the cause of injustice, it is much more painful than just any other austerity that comes on its own accord due to unavoidable circumstances. But if a person is responsible for creating this austerity, then we're speaking of injustice. And that is much more difficult to bear. But it is mentioned that Jad Bharat did not hold any grudges. That is an important point. Grudges are also arising under the influence of the illusory energy and identifying with matter. Jad Bharat had no such identification. He had no objective in relation to the material energy. He was not looking for a comfortable life. He was simply appreciating that he had a duty to keep body and soul together. And that material duty he accepted, not that he... we don't see that Jad Bharat at an early age decided to fast until death and just let it all go, or not drink water and say, let's finish up this material existence, I don't want anything to do with it. He took the duty to be sinless. So, therefore, that was not an option, because such activity is condemned. So, within the directions of the Supreme Lord for sinless behavior, Jad Bharat took the deposition where he was least involved with material affairs. And in that way, going through the natural course of life and enduring any hardships. Srila Rupa Goswami establishes particularly the foundation of renunciation in the Sankirtan movement as of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as in the verse Anashakta Sivisyan Yataraham Upajunjataha Nirbanda Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Uchite, where he's establishing one must be Anashaktasya, or one must be unattached. Yataraham Upajunjataha, one must employ in a way that is appropriate, according, one must engage himself in a way that is appropriate according to the requirements of the Supreme Lord. Anukulyena, it must be favorable for the Lord in devotional service. And then for personal requirement, the absolute minimum for the service of the Lord, Krishna Sambandha, for the service of the Lord, oh yes, for the servant of the Lord, what cannot be accepted? Only those things that are not found suitable as to the Lord has described, patram pusvam valam toyam yomai bhaktya priyatsati, has described certain activities, certain offerings that can be made. Panam jutam striyam sunam. There are meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex, and so on. These are described as activities of adharma, and therefore reject it. So in this way, within the boundaries that are established by Shastra, that are established by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one may live a life of renunciation. Jad Bharat seemed to have followed a somewhat different process of renunciation than the Yukta Vairagya process of Rupa Goswami, in the sense that Jad Bharat was staying very aloof, very, very aloof in the world, and whereas Rupa Goswami is in that line of Yukta Vairagya, we see that the material energy may be used and should be used in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we see how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur takes that Yukta Vairagya and takes it from a traditional culture into the modern world, and begins to employ the fruits from otherwise an Ugra Karma culture in the service of the Lord. Just like Srila Prabhupada describes that in the purports of the first canto, that the factories are compared to the dungeons of the demons. And he describes that in these factories, what goes on is Ugra Karma, horrible work meant to destroy the world. And yet, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta suddenly revolutionized things by engaging such kind of products in the service of the Lord. A car is basically an evil machine, an explosion motor based on evil substances, petrol and so on, and fumigating the world at the same time, while the car, the tires are killing living entities at neck-breaking speed as it's racing over the tarmac. So, and then if you multiply that by the world population using such machines, then it becomes very destructive. And yet, we see that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did not hesitate to take such fruits and engaging them in the service of the Lord. Of course, not that by engaging such objects in the service of the Lord that they changed their nature. A car still remains an aggressive machine, and still one moment of inattentiveness and great havoc is the result. So many negative effects remain even engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, it is it's not constitutionally so that we would engage such type of products in the service of the Lord. Rather, at a time of emergency, yes, why not? Using cars to get rid of cars, using computers to get rid of computers, using technology to drive it out of the world is fine. Otherwise, why would a Vaishnava take to such activities? Rather, as the Sankirtan movement will evolve, it is mentioned that gradually the conditions like Satya Yuga will return, and there will be one class of man, Ekavarna Haribhakta, mentioned in that discussion between Ganga and Krishna, referred to in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, which describes the 10,000-year golden age in Kali Yuga. So there will be a time when all these things will gradually disappear out of the world. And when simple life becomes the standard life for a Vaishnava, because what is required other than the mode of goodness? Srila Prabhupada explains in his Nectar of Devotion series lectures that he gave in Vrindavan. He's speaking about the standard of life these days is to work very hard. That is the ideal. Work very hard for material betterment. And one who is not working very hard is like not considered a very respectable person. And Prabhupada explains that that is all coming forth out of Rajagun. Why work so hard? Why make so many arrangements, right, for meeting the basic needs of life? So many endless, huge arrangements, huge buildings, multi-stories everywhere. What is the need? What is the need? These days, I've been asked by my seniors to reflect on the spiritual city that is to develop here in Mayapur, and to give some sense of vision for this place. And I'm thinking about it. Why so many buildings? Why so many apartments? Why so many motorbikes, right? 500cc, my God. I mean, that's an enormous killer machine. Why? Why fridges? Why air conditioners? Why all these things? Is it needed? Is it beneficial? Will it help us in our spiritual development? Will it truly lift us above our attachment to the material energy? Will it really help us to become absorbed in hearing and chanting and in devotional service? Or will we work around the clock to somehow or other score the cash to pay for all these things? Some of these questions come to mind at times. And then looking at the model of a Jat Bharat, I think it is for that reason that Jat Bharat is still relevant today, even in the midst of this Sankirtan movement. Not an outdated personality who lived in an other yuga and is just amazingly, extraordinarily renounced and incredibly transcendental. And of course, we take that principle of also having to be transcendental. No, more so. More so. Completely relevant to us, and everyone should ask himself, do I really need this? In the purports of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada, we see in verses that deal with the discussions between Satyaraj Khan, who was a resident of Fulia, who came to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, and he was asking about who is a Vaishnava? What is the ultimate duty of spiritual life, and who is a Vaishnava? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said the ultimate duty of life is Vaishnav Sevana in Nirantar Krishna Nama Sankirtan, is to serve the Vaishnavas and to always, without cessation, without ever stopping, being absorbed in Krishna Nama Sankirtan. And then Satyaraj Khan asked, who is a Vaishnava? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, a Vaishnava is one who chants the holy name once. So, in three successive years, Satyaraj Khan asked the same question. In the second year, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the same answer on the first question. What is the duty? Vaishnav Sevan Nirantar Krishna Nama Sankirtan. But then he said that a Vaishnava is one who chants all the time. And the third year, again, Vaishnava Sevana, and again, Krishna Nama, Niranta Krishna Nama Sankirtan. And then, a Vaishnava is one who, by merely seeing him, makes Vaishnavas all over the world. So we see three levels of Vaishnavas, and we see the Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam Adhikari levels described here. And then we see that the Madhyam Adhikari is described, and it is said that the Madhyam Adhikari is, Srila Prabhupada is in the purports there, describes the Madhyam Adhikari is chanting all the time. He's chanting all the time. He said, of course, for a Grihastha, that may be difficult to do, he mentions then. He said, but the Grihastha chants, he says, chants in the morning, at noon, and at night. Whew. Well, that's quite a bit, thinking about that. And in the same purports, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the standard of Grihastha life within our movement should not be on the same standard as Grihastha life in the world. That we should be prepared to live by a more austere standard. So, of course, same counts for the sannyas ashram. I mean, to balance my statements a little bit, I'm not targeting anyone in particular, really. I'm speaking not about you, I'm speaking about us. To be a sannyasi is a very difficult position. It is not recommended in the age of Kali. Kalo pancha vivarjayet. There are five things forbidden: asvamedam, gavalambam, sannyasam, palapaitrikam, devarena sutotpatin. Kalo pancha vivarjayet. So five things forbidden in the age of Kali, and sannyas is one of them. Nonetheless, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave sannyas, and Srila Prabhupada purports to that in in the portion of Srimad Bhagavatam which deals with the renunciation of Kardama Muni. There Srila Prabhupada explains how Vaishnava sannyas is of a different nature than the dry renunciation of the impersonalist sannyasis. But by being absorbed in devotional service, then it is possible, just as we see also mentioned by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the mantra, Itam sastaya paratmanistam ajasitam purvatamer mahatpi antarishyanti durantaparam tamomukundangri niseveva. That we must always be absorbed in service to the lotus feet of Mukunda. By doing so, then we have the transcendental boat by which we can cross the ocean of material existence. We are all in that same transcendental boat. Ashram is, in a sense, a very secondary thing for this movement. Our aim is to go back to Godhead. And our aim, therefore, is the same as the aim of Jat Bharat, to get out of the material world this lifetime, not any other lifetime. Not that we become subjected to defeatism and think, it cannot be done in one lifetime. No, it can be done in one lifetime, irregardless of ashram, if we are serious and apply ourselves very seriously. So this particular episode of Srimad Bhagavatam is calling for that seriousness, is calling for that seriousness in application to the process. And
is in that sense meant to be as a wake-up call. Srimad Bhagavatam is not only sweet. Srimad Bhagavatam is not only describing the sweet pastimes of Krishna and we just relish and relish and relish. Srimad Bhagavatam is quite cutting at times. Srimad Bhagavatam is piercing our own walls of false ego, our own walls of illusion, our own attachment, which we have comfortably carried on board of this ship of transcendental knowledge in our hand luggage, and which we are not so easily leaving behind. Therefore, even in the sannyas ashram in this day and age, one has to be very careful. So, yukta vairagya is such a thing. One can engage the products of ugra karma in the in the service of Krishna for the sake of spreading the sankirtan movement. We can use Facebook for pushing the sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Facebook at the same time has a strong sucking effect, like a vacuum cleaner, which sort of pulls in all our thoughts, and it's also very easily to get totally distracted. So therefore, we can go in and out. Therefore, our public life, our life as preachers, may look different than Jat Bharat. Our public life in using things in the service of the Lord may look quite a bit different in this time. But our private life doesn't look any different at all. Our private life should also be very simple. And simplicity is an asset. Our private life should also be aimed at staying clear from the material energy, understanding very well that it is dangerous. Now, to balance those statements, I would have to add that in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the process of bhakti is explained by Rupa Goswami, and he explains that bhakti exists in 64 limbs or 64 different aspects of devotional service. Each of these 64 limbs of bhakti are transcendental. And then Srila Rupa Goswami also mentions that vairagya, jnana and vairagya, these are like preliminaries. Knowledge and renunciation in itself are not part of bhakti, are not giving bhakti. But they are preliminaries, and not just unimportant preliminaries either, because they give us time, they give us space, they give us peace of mind, which are the prerequisites for being Krishna conscious. A simple example, imagine you borrow a lot of money so that you can really set yourself up really nice. And then you have this debt, which is always on your mind, constantly on your mind. So then it's a little difficult to think of Krishna, because the anxiety of having such a debt will slowly start taking over a good portion of our consciousness, like that. Many examples can be given. Sometimes I say, when you lock away some money, you're not only just locking away some money, you're also locking away part of your consciousness. At the same time, thinking about my money is there, my money. How many times thinking of my money, and so on. So, therefore, renunciation is valuable, because it creates a platform of simplicity, where there's time, where the mind is not absorbed in hundreds of complications, but then one still has to use all that time, all that peace of mind for the real, in the real substance of hearing, chanting, and in devotional service to Krishna. Otherwise, such renunciation has no value at all. Otherwise, it's simply a temporary achievement which will be lost again. But such renunciation is essential, an essential part of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. Vairagya Vijanitya Bhakti Yogam. So it is stated. So in this way, I hope my presentation is not coming across as fanatic or trying to push a more renounced lifestyle than is required because of the danda. No, it's rather fueled by the same motive of Jat Bharat, namely by fear of the material energy, fear of material existence. One needs a healthy fear of material existence. If we just rely on our love for Krishna, I don't know how much is there. Little, alpa, maybe. But not so much. So, therefore, to counterbalance that alpa, that little love for Krishna, we might need a healthy dose of fear of the material energy. With that, I'll end. Any question? Any comments? Navina Nirada Prabhu wants the microphone.
The Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became manifest from its early stages by the appearance of the elders who appeared before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in this world, and who all seemed to have a connection with Madhavendra Puri, who seemed to be the first personality in which this extraordinary love of God began to manifest. The Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya, or the diary of Murari Gupta, is describing that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested in Madhavendra Puri as a Shakti Avesh avatar, and that therefore this Krishna Prem first manifested in him, which is interesting. So even before the physical appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the golden age began to manifest. Srivas Thakur, somehow or other, so it is described in Chaitanya Chandradoya Natak, was not living a very devotional life, a somewhat departee life in his youth. But then a prediction came that he would die within 1 year, and he took up devotional service. At the end of that year, he fell from the veranda and was caught by someone in mid-air. It is said that he survived somehow or other and was still dizzy, but because of this miraculous experience of his life being saved, the next morning, he started his life, and he somehow or other started like with the idea of making a fresh start, and he picked up Shastra, and it was the Brihannaradiya Purana. And he read the verse, Harinama, Harinama, Eva Kevalam, Kalona, Stevana, 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 Gatir Anyata. And that became such an inspiration to him. At that moment, he felt the Narada Shakti sort of manifest within him. And it is said that then he took up this mission to start kirtan in his house every night, although the neighbors considered it off the wall. Right, to sort of put it in those words. So like that, we see how some of the pioneers of this movement were active before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srivas Thakur, is sort of placed in the generation of the parents of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in this way, the Sankirtan movement has started, and it's like a lotus that is gradually opening and becoming more and more revealed. So this is going on, and we are very much part of that miracle, absolutely. Many have gone back to Godhead through this movement already, and therefore, in one sense, the imperfections in this movement are only existing on the surface. On the surface, there are all these problems and things, but on a deeper level, the perfect process of Harinam Sankirtan is not affected. And on a deeper level below that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is driving this movement. So the golden age is carried forward in this movement now. And as the lotus will open, it will manifest more and more. Like that. As far as your second question is concerned, Vrindavan and how it's overrun by the Ugra Karma products, right? And Mayapur is following suit, it appears. All that, one day the petrol will be over, one day the electricity will be finished. Don't worry, that will come. That will be over. Possibly in between, there may be a period of radioactivity in the drinking water, which is a big concern. But then, even radioactive fallout, perhaps the demigods can adjust these things. So, these things are trivial. Trivial, my dear Watson. Elementary. If you don't mind. Okay. Yeah, thank you. We'll put one of the internet in there, I guess. You told that our aim is to go back to Godhead. For this, you told that it's possible in this lifetime. For this, we have to seriously apply the process. Please elaborate. What is that serious application of the process in practical terms? To apply ourselves with heart and soul to pleasing Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And that's it. And more detail, that would take a seminar, which I can't give today. Yes? No, not two at a time. Although everyone can hear you, I don't know if on the internet or on the radio they can hear you. And there's lots of radio listeners here. I was one yesterday myself.
Haribo?
You mentioned that Srimad Bhagavatam is often cutting. Also cutting. Uh-huh. So what does it mean about your bhakti if you're very attracted to the cutting parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, like the forest of material enjoyment or Lord Rishabhdev's teachings to Devahuti, but you're not so attracted to the Madhurya aspect of the Srimad Bhagavatam, like the Rasa Leela and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. If you're more attracted to these cutting parts of Bhagavatam and not so much to the Madhurya Leela, what about that? These are all incomplete realizations of Srimad Bhagavatam. One who has complete realization of Srimad Bhagavatam is in ecstasy about the cutting parts of Bhagavatam and in ecstasy about the Madhurya parts of Bhagavatam. Relishes in them all. So, but in the earlier stages, Srinvata Svakata Krishnam Punya Sravana Kiyatanam Ridhyanta Stovi Abhadrani. So the inauspiciousness has to be removed from the heart by our reading of Bhagavatam. At that stage, our reading of Bhagavatam is a sadhana and not sadhya. At that stage, we are not actually relishing fully the transcendental nature of Bhagavatam. But still, to an extent, we do. And that extent is wonderful. So, as Bhagavatam, whether you only partially relish Bhagavatam or fully, it's wonderful that we are relishing Bhagavatam. Yes?
Maharaj.
Oui, monsieur.
There is a question I have. I heard a guru recently mention that sometimes he does not give a good instruction to a disciple, a bad disciple.
Sometimes a guru doesn't give a good instruction to a disciple.
A bad
Just
disciple.
See. Huh?
Because he wants to save that disciple from disobeying the spiritual master.
Okay, he wants to save the disciple.
So by contrast, I mean, this is, you could say, the extreme end of compassion, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. And the other contrast in context with Jat Bharat's story.
Okay.
Who is a very...
If you give me too much at once, then my brain can't remember. I'm taking Brahmi, but it doesn't seem to work.
So Jat Bharat, on the other hand... On the other extreme, he has hundreds of people offending him every day, and he allows it. He doesn't seem to think that maybe he could avoid that, going to the forest.
Okay. Two questions in one.
Yes. Is that compassion, or is it not compassion?
Okay. If I can deal with question one and two, we'll follow, and if I remember it right. A hypothetical question that sometimes the guru is not giving a good instruction to his disciple because he is afraid that the disciple will not be able to follow the good instruction and therefore he doesn't give it to him to avoid the disciple getting involved in making an offense of guru avakya, disobeying the order of the spiritual master. No, that the question is suggesting a wrong scenario. The guru always gives good instruction, but he may give good instructions on different levels. Yes. Sometimes there may be higher levels of instructions, right? And there may be instructions that allow the disciple to take up more involvement with the material energy due to the fact that the disciple is attached and therefore not able to surrender, then the guru may give a good instruction that connects to that attached situation. When the disciple is somewhat more mature and becomes like a Madhyam Adhikari, then he is very surrendered to guru's instructions. Then he may ask for a higher instructions, but his instructions are always for the benefit of the disciple. So it's not that guru gives sometimes good and sometimes bad instructions. Now you have to remind me of question number two. I told you, I forget.
Jat Bharat, on the other hand, didn't seem to mind or to be mindful of what may happen to all those hundreds of offenders who were spitting on him and treating him like dirt. Is this a lack of compassion? He could have gone to the forest and spared these people to offend a pure devotee. Or is it compassion?
The Uttama Adhikari, so it is described in the Nectar of Devotion, doesn't see anything lacking in this world. He sees everyone is a devotee, except for me. Therefore, the Uttama Adhikari sees everyone is serving Krishna, and there is there's no defect. So, Tathbharat did not see it any different. He obviously saw from that very exalted platform, and seeing everyone is engaged in Krishna's service and himself has fallen. Later, when Maharaj Rahugana became, who was such a great powerful king, when he became offensive, all right, then maybe, as we had our little discussion before the lecture, then maybe, he made an exception. He became compassionate and externally came down from that Uttama platform and started to act externally like Dimajam, although internally remaining an Uttam Adhikari, like that. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your wonderful class. Maharaj, my question is that why the Uttama Adhikari stays, they sometimes stay up on the Uttama Adhikari platform and don't come down to the Madhyama Adhikari platform to preach? Because it seems like out of compassion, you know, someone that's so advanced, they could help so many people in the world expressing the compassion of the Lord. So why they would neglect to do so? Why don't we see more?
Okay, the first part of the answer is Vaishnavira Kriya Vigyana Bujai. You know, how can we understand the minds of such Vaishnavas? Right? So who am I to say anything about such personalities? again, they see that by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everyone is following the path of the Lord anyway, and that everyone is partaking of the mercy of the Lord in some way or other. So they, therefore, they see an ocean of mercy and prem, and they are just overwhelmed by that ocean of mercy and prem. And so they see reality very different than we see it. What is the meaning of all this material existence anyway? It's on eternity. You know, even if we are anadi bahir mukha, since time immemorial in the material world, so many lifetimes. What is that anyway on eternity? But just less than a moment. But the shortcut is nice, that we can go back to Godhead at this time. So this is particularly the Yuga Dharma, the predominating spirit of the Supreme Lord Himself. Now this mood prevails. Now it is so much in the forefront. And of course, that is the most wonderful. But that is coming from Mahaprabhu. Otherwise, those Uttama Adhikaris who are peacefully absorbed in their own loving relationship with the Supreme Lord and not preaching, let us offer our obeisances to their lotus feet. And even that will purify us. Okay, I have one. Last one from the internet. How can we find the balance of renunciation and service to Krishna without imitating such exalted devotees as Jagbharat? Well, I mentioned service to Krishna is our primary objective, to be fully engaged in service of Krishna. Then where we have to, however, deal with the material energy and make arrangements for our private needs within the boundaries of what is authorized. Dare we take something from the spirit of Jagbharat, some simplicity, so that we will not get distracted from the opportunity to render maximum service to Krishna. That would sum it up. Last, yes. On the topic.
Actually, Maharaj, in Bhagavad Gita 2nd chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna that if you renounce this battle, it's worse than death. So here you can see Krishna gives prominence for dignity, prominence for claiming justice. This is in contrast with what you were speaking in the case of Jadabharata, that austerity of injustice should be digested.
Mm.
This is one thing. And one more question related to
the... I can't handle two at the same time. You saw it before. I just can't do it. One is all I can take, and then it's breakfast. I think that when it comes to the Bhagavad Gita, right, that there are so many translations out there, and some may be very sincere and good attempts, and some may be translated with ulterior motives. But there is only one Bhagavad Gita as it is, right, obviously, written by Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada, he explains it that actually we are what was his point? On what did you quote from the Gita? Blank. No. You said the renunciation, you quoted a verse from the Bhagavad Gita and translated it as renunciation, but Prabhupada doesn't translate it as renunciation. Oh, jeez, my memory. I told you these Brahmi pills. Can you restate your question exactly like you did before?
Okay, Maharaj. In the 2nd chapter, Maharaj, Krishna says that you have to fight the battle. You leave the battle, people will mock you that you are a coward, and taking that is worse than death. Here, Krishna gives prominence for the dignity.
Yes, worse than death. Perhaps a dishonor is worse than death. He translates like that. So the translation doesn't call for dishonor is worse than death is one point. So the fact that Arjuna had to fight his battle, yes, he had to. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, so he was meant to go to battle. We see that Jagbharat was a different person. He had a different duty. So he was beyond Varnashram, his duty. First of all, being from a Brahminical background, his duty was different. And he took the ultimate duty, the duty that is a duty to act in the material world, the pravritti mark, to improve the conditions in the material world. And there's a higher duty, known as the nivritti mark, the duty to get out of the material world. That is the primary duty, to get out of the material world. So therefore, Jagbharat reminds us of the higher duty, to get out of the material world. Let's leave it like that for today. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.